because I just jumped in as a moderator, but I'm sure it's going to be interesting. So this first talk here is going to be Guillaume Thomas from the University of Toronto. Please go ahead since we're already over time.
Okay, thank you. So I'll be telling you about a project that I've been working on since, 2013 in a sense, which is to build a tree bank of Moolah, a multi-layer corpus of Moolah. A tree bank essentially is a syntactically annotated corpus, as you might know, and Moolah is a Tupi Guarani language spoken in South America, as I will tell you more about very soon. What I wanted to do in this presentation is the following. I wanted to tell you a little bit about the Moolah language itself, and then about this resource, the tree bank that we're building, in particular what kind of annotation we were putting in it. And also I wanted to tell you a little bit about the workflow that we adopted to build this this tree bank and some of the future projects that we have for it. So first, a few words about Moolah. This is a Tupi Guarani language from the Tupi stock, a very large stock of language spoken in South America. The Tupi Guarani family itself is fairly large, with eight canonical subgroups that have been identified. Guarani Moolah is a Guarani language that is part of the so-called subgroup 1 of Tupi Guarani languages. Some say that languages in this group are actually form a dialect, especially Paraguayan Guarani, Moolah, and Nyandeva and Kiowa, which are all forms of Guarani. Others identify them as different languages belonging to a macro language Guarani. If you've heard of Guarani, you're probably familiar with Paraguayan Guarani, which is one of the two national languages of Paraguay. Moolah is an indigenous dialect, which is spoken in Argentina, in Brazil, and in Paraguay by approximately 30,000 speakers. So this slide shows you the area where the language is spoken. That's actually part of this Mapa Guarani Continental that shows the distribution of Guarani languages in South America. Moolah is spoken essentially all along the coastline of Brazil in this corridor here between Brazil and Argentina, with the province of Misiones, which is one of the strongholds of Moolah, and this part of Paraguay. Now, Tupi Guarani languages are actually relatively well-described and documented languages in South America and in the Tupi stocks in particular. So there is a very rich scholarship on the language that I don't have time to go over. There's advanced grammatical descriptions, in particular with one grammar that was produced by a linguist called Robert Dooley from SIL. He worked on this grammar from 1984 until the last edition is 2015. That's a grammar with a very detailed lexicon. There are other grammatical descriptions that have been produced, a PhD thesis. As you saw, the language has a relatively large number of speakers for an indigenous Brazilian language, and it's spoken in a very large territory. In the appendix, I have slides that document, if you're interested, the fact that there's also a relatively large number of written and audiovisual documents that have been produced in Moolah. So I identify 51 books with ISBNs that were written in Moolah. And there's, I don't know how many videos and recordings that circulate on YouTube and other social medias. So there's quite a lot of documentation in a sense, but paradoxically, there's only one publicly available corpus that is not searchable. It was produced by Robert Dooley, and we're going to talk about it. And also, there's virtually no documentation of variation. In this perspective, one of the things that I wanted to do with this project is to build a multi-layer corpus of text that uses this legacy material and enriches it with annotations, different layers of annotation, makes it accessible when possible due to copyright on public archives, and also proposes advanced search and visualization tools. And ideally, I would also like to include documents from various areas and time to help with the documentation of variation of this language, which is spoken in such a large territory. So I digitized about 6,000 sentences worth of text. Here are the main documents that are currently in our corpus. Now, the two core subcorpora that I'm going to be talking about are these two, Robert Dooley's ILI collection and the so-called INRC corpus. So I'm going to tell you about these abbreviations in a moment, but essentially this corpus here is composed of texts that were written. They're not transcriptions of audio recordings. We have morphological glosses, lemmas, part of speech tagging, syntactic dependencies, coreference annotation, and animacy annotation that we have produced for this subcorpora, right? And we have corrected it. So these 1,000 sentences form the core of the project that I'm going to tell you about today. This corpus is a corpus of transcription of oratory speeches that were produced in Brazil between 2013 and 2015 in a documentation project that I supervised. And we have annotated it automatically with parser-speech tagging and syntactic dependencies with parsers that we produce with the first subcorpus. And we are currently correcting the annotation of this corpus. Now, let me tell you then about these two main corpora. So, Robert Dooley's ILA collection is a collection of narratives that were produced between 1970 and 1980 in SIL Indigenous Literature Workshops. They were produced by two speakers from Paraná, Nelson Florentino and Darcy Pérez de Lima. And they're currently archived on the Archive of the Indigenous Languages of Latin America. It's password protected, but it's publicly available. I just have to write to Robert Dooley, who's the gatekeeper for the corpus. Now, why did we start with this collection? Well, essentially, it was more convenient to bootstrap the whole project, right? It was already available in publicly accessible archived, albeit in PDF form. Robert Dooley kindly authorized the archiving of the annotation that we would produce based on it. And then Robert Dooley has his own interlinearization of the text in PDF, and the spelling was normalized and consistent with his grammatical description, which made the analysis easier. The second corpus that we included is this corpus of text from the Inventario Nacional de Referencias Culturais do Povo Guarani dos Estados do Rio de Janeiro e Espírito Santo, which is a documentation project that ran from 2013 to 2015 in Brazil. And the goal of this project was to document verbal arts in the language, oratory speeches, songs, and ceremonial discourse. Six communities from two states participated in the project, and the documentation team was Mbuah. The researchers were Mbuah. So we had 12 young adults and 12 elders. The elders were recorded in public speech events by the younger researchers, who then recorded, edited, and translated the recordings in ELAN. Here are the names. And they produced about 80 hours of audiovisual recordings, which are currently archived at the Museu do Índio in Brazil. Now, among all of these documents, 3 hours of speeches were transcribed and translated in ELAN. And that's the part of the subcorpus that we included in our tree bank, right? So that will be the first publicly archived corpus of oral discourses in Bo'ah. The existing documentation that we have is massively text that were written, not transcribed, but written. And I hope that this will counterbalance this emphasis on written language in the existing documentation. Here are the participants in the project. Okay, so that's the two core corpora that we are including in our tree bank. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the annotation that we added to these documents. So there's a number of desiderata that I wanted to satisfy. First of all, we want the annotation to be consistent with state-of-the-art scholarship on Bo'ah, which, in my opinion, is Robert Dooley's grammar and his dictionary. And then we wanted an annotation scheme that would facilitate the comparison between Mbla and other languages, including but not limited to other Tupi Guarani languages. That's both for analytical purposes, right? Because we might want to compare Mbla to other languages in typological projects. That's also for practical purposes, in order, for instance, to do cross-lingual parsing and to project the tool that we build onto other closely related languages. In addition, the guidelines, the annotation guidelines that we adopt should have a soft learning curve. You should not need to be a specialist of the language to understand the annotation guideline, and they should be simple enough that smart undergraduate students should be able to work as research assistants to help you annotate. And we want an annotation framework also that is well supported by NLP tools. So because of all of these desiderata, we decided to do the annotation in universal dependencies. I don't know if who is familiar with universal dependencies here, so that I have an idea? Okay, so a good number of you are familiar with universal dependencies, which is, I quote, a framework for cross-linguistically consistent grammatical annotation and an open community effort with over 200 contributors producing more than 100 tree banks in over 70 languages. And the project is spearheaded by Joachim Nivre at Uppsala University. Now, universal dependencies tries to be both a fieldwork framework for cross-linguistic annotation that uses a coherent set of tags and syntactic relations and features that will be applied to a wide diversity of languages. And it try also, as you know, to accommodate specific annotation guidelines for each language. The way it does that is that the framework allows different levels or different granularity of annotation. So on one level, we have 17 universal parts of speech tags, 37 universal syntactic relations, and 49 grammatical features. On the other hand, we also have a level of language-specific part of speech tags, and we have language-specific subtyping of the syntactic relations in the framework, which allows for this flexibility. And the difficulty of adapting the framework to different languages are well discussed because of the wide number of languages that have been annotated in this project. So here are a few languages, typologically diverse languages that have a UD tree bank: Ainu, Amharic, Japanese, Vietnamese, Yoruba. Okay. Now, I told you about universal dependencies and this goal to both propose a universal framework for annotation and accommodate language diversity in annotation guideline. Now, I should tell you also, if you're not familiar with universal dependencies, that this framework is meant to annotate syntax in dependency grammar, right? Now, dependency grammar, as you know, represents syntactic structure as a graph, a grammatical relation between words called dependencies. It's surface-oriented. There are no transformation, at least not in the version of dependency grammar adopted by the Universal Dependencies Project. And therefore, it's a very convenient analytical framework to annotate free word order languages, which for us was important. Another feature of dependency annotation in universal dependencies is that content words are assumed to be heads of function words and not the other way around. So here is a simplified syntactic representation with parts of speech of one of the sentences in our corpus without all of the layers of annotation. Of this type, he removed three and he took them with him. So you see that the root is, putting aside this dummy root node, the root of the whole sentence is the verb, the main verb, right, which has as dependent its object. The object is a noun. You see here that the determiner is dependent on the noun and not vice versa. And this also illustrates a discontinuous constituent, haeva inunga mbulape, or something that we can analyze at least as a discontinuous constituent. Of this type, he removed three. Okay, now, I'd like to tell you now about the different layers that we annotated, that we added to our corpus, and the tools that we used to do that. So first of all, the first step in the creation of the corpus was interlinearization and parts of speech tagging. Now, there's no generally accepted spelling and tokenization conventions in Lua, so we had to follow some. We had to decide on one set of conventions, and we followed Robert Dooley's convention, since it's popular in the regions where the documents that we are currently annotating originate from. And as far as parts of speech tagging, there's a number of peculiarities of Mbua that we try to capture at the level of language-specific parts of speech. So for instance, there's a distinction between inactive and active intransitive verbs that we wanted to capture in our part of speech tagging. Most adjectives or words that would appear as adjectives in universal dependencies are actually inactive verbs in the language, so we need to have an adjective part of speech tag in universal dependencies and a language-specific inactive verb tag. Nouns are used as predicates, so we'll have nominal predicates. And then there's a rich particle of inventory. There's a rich particle inventory that is also captured at the level of language-specific tagging. Here's an example of the interlinearization and language-specific tagging, which we did in SIL fieldwork. So I will continue. Then, after we interlinearized and tagged the texts in fieldworks, we exported them to SIL FlexText XML, and we converted SIL XML to the canonical format for universal dependency annotation, namely the CONLU tab-separated format. So here is an example of this format, which is the same text as the one that was presented here. You see a column for word forms, lemma, universal parts of speech, language-specific parts of speech, heads, dependency relation to the heads, glosses imported for fieldworks. There is a column for grammatical feature that is present in there, but we haven't filled it because we haven't yet extracted grammatical features from the corpus. So the conversion was done with Python, and the conversion script also performs a rudimentary lemmatization and maps the part of speech that are specific to Mbua to universal dependency part of speech. And yes. And then we annotated the corpus in dependency using the software operator. So we wanted a piece of software that would allow us to do collaborative dependency annotation online that would have convenient management functions, including tools for calculating inter-annotator agreements. And we decided an operator, which in my opinion was the most convenient software for us to use. Incidentally, it's one of the few dependency annotating softwares that makes it easy for you to have a layer of translation. Most annotation softwares, surprisingly, that we tried did not allow us to do that without jumping through hoops. After doing the annotation in operator, or correcting automatic annotation in operator, we added coreference annotation. So that involved tagging referential expressions, which might be overt or covert, zero subject and zero object, in which case we tagged the verbs for having a zero subject or having a zero object. And we added coreference relations, relations of referential identity and relations of, well, essentially bridging anaphora between referential expressions, which we did in the platform WebAnno 3. Which you can see here, right? So again, we exported the CONLU annotated file re-imported them in Webano 3. Webano converts automatically CONLU file. And we added, I don't know if you can see here the coreference notation, but a long time ago there were three men, so the three men is tagged as a referential span that is the antecedent of an inferred, so in that case partitive relation, to this other referential expression pertaining to Jaliva A, the older one. Then we uploaded everything in a platform for visualization and search, and the platform that we chose for that is ANIS, which has a very nice support for multi-layer annotation and an advanced query language, and also a very nice set of tools for conversion of different formats to the RHEL ANIS format that is used by the platform. So here is for an example of the visualization of the the corpus. We're looking here at pairs of verbs that have coreferential subjects. So you have a layer, you have the original sentence, the interlinearization, the dependency tree. I'm not showing you the coreference relation because it takes too much space. And ANIS was a very good tool, not just for visualization and search per se, but also it's a great tool for corpus correction because of the advanced search function it offers. Okay, so if I may very briefly tell you about the workflow that we adopted to do that. First interlinearized the corpus. I actually did that myself. That took me about a year, given my other obligations. Then I annotated manually 300 sentences of the corpus in Arborator, which I used to train a parser on 300 sentences using, at the time, the MALT parser software. And with this parser, we parsed the remaining 700 sentences of the corpus, which were then corrected by myself and student research assistants in Arborator. Then in winter 2018, a group of three undergraduate students and one graduate student at U of T added coreference annotation to the corpus in Webano, and we uploaded the results to ANIS. The ILA collection that we produced, the annotation of Robert Dooley's ILA collection that we produced will be uploaded soon to ILA, the Archive of Indigenous Languages of Latin America. The collection has already been created, we just need to upload the documents. And the INRC corpus has been automatically parsed, but we still need to correct it, which I expect will take us something like 6 months. The annotation will then be archived at the Museo do Índio, which is the institution where the original documents are produced, are archived. So looking forward, what are our plans for the corpus? Well, we need to add full interlinearization to the INRC part of the corpus. We need to correct the part of speech tagging and dependency annotation that were automatically produced by our NLP pipeline. And we need to integrate this annotation with the ELAN time-aligned transcription and translation that we already had. We still need to make plans for making the corpus accessible to MBLA speakers and not just available online in principle. And then in the definitely not near future, I also plan to work on spelling normalization and tokenization. I intend to produce a morphological analyzer, and I would also like to add a layer of morphological dependency annotation to the corpus. Currently, we only have syntactic dependency annotation and an independent layer of interlinearization. So I will conclude now. I'm 4 minutes late. So we were in an excellent situation for TreeBank development. This is a language that did not have this kind of resource, but that had advanced scholarship, advanced grammatical description, and a lot of legacy material. This tool will certainly be a rich database for quantitative linguistics research, and we are already using it to develop NLP resources. Currently, we have a tokenizer, a parser speech tagger, and a syntactic dependency parsing model. We do need to think about how to make these resources useful to speakers. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this talk. I'm glad I didn't try to pronounce the language in my introduction.
Yes.
But we just have a couple of minutes for questions. Yes, Minister?
I want to ask, did you also include the conference the universal model as it was itself?
Ultimately, yes. Currently, there are copyright issues. Not really copyright issues, because Robert Dooley allowed me to distribute the corpus under certain conditions, but just not conditions that go so far as to make it publicly available without passwords online. And the same for the INRC corpus. But then the plan is to, I'm currently recording more speech with speakers who are willing to give their authorization for the speech to be distributed on the internet, precisely for that reason.
Yeah, rights can be the
question. Thanks.
Do you have a sense of the error rate of the parser?
Yes, so I have a slide about that, I just went over it. So that's inflated, okay? But when we evaluated it on 60 sentences retained from the corpus, so that's already inflated because of that. And also it's on the same corpus, so there's written by the same two speakers, very homogeneous corpus. We had 74% of label attachment score. I expect it's lower on other text in the corpus that we haven't yet corrected, but we haven't corrected them, so we can't evaluate.
Once you make the corrections, do you then retrain a model with the corrected sentences?
Yes, I mean we did the process incrementally. I mean essentially there was a first batch of 300 sentences, and then we parsed the 700 sentences, and then we retrained the corpus little by little. Yes.
Can you comment on that last bullet that the parser helped in the annotation process?
Yes. So essentially, if you look at our annotation, so this is operator, right? And the way you annotate is simply you pull down a sentence, right, and then you drag and drop annotations between words. Very easy, right? And then when you do that, the program gives you the range of dependency relations that you have defined in your project. So the way the parser helped is that the parser produced trees, right? And at 70% labeled attachment score, it means that 30% of relations were either not attached to the right word or had an incorrect label. But that's still better to correct 30% than the whole corpus, right? So that's the reason how it sped up the annotation task.
I'm sure there's more questions about this. It's very interesting. I'm looking forward to talking about this more, I guess, during break time. We've got to move on to our next talk.
Thank you.
Thank you.